How'd your challah turn out?
Mine?
Yeah.
Yeah, not very good. This one, for some reason, didn't do well.
Okay. It didn't. That's too bad.
It looked sad. I mean, it didn't. It had a weird shape, and I liked this. You know, when we did three, I liked my second one the best. This one, although, I decided to freeze half of it for Rosh Hashanah, so I'll have it. Did yours turn out okay?
Yeah, oh, the freeze is fine. I think how did mine turn out? Well, it tasted really good. I think the recipe is pretty much foolproof, but there were like gaps, and Susan said I didn't have the strands close enough to each other. So, and then I put a lot of honey and in the egg wash, so there were like these pools of honey. So it was extra sweet and tasted good, but it was not a work of art at all. Yeah. How is Carol? You did it too?
Yeah, it came out really well.
Okay. Nice. So that's kind of how mine was, with those like the gaps in there, like the yellowish. So I guess that's
I had that too, though. I had that too. Yeah.
I mean, it tasted delicious, and I thought it looked nice, so.
And did you put apples in yours? No.
I didn't. No, this was my first challah ever, so I was not taking any risks.
Okay.
Yeah, that's why my second one, which I thought wasn't going to turn out well, because I had to keep, I added so much flour, it just wouldn't, but yet it tasted the best of all three of mine. So who knows? It's the same recipe. Yeah, I don't know why the taste would change if it's the same recipe, but who knows?
Mine was so good. I really enjoyed mine. So good, so good.
Yeah.
I might even make some again.
Yeah, there you go.
What were you making?
We're talking about.
Oh.
Yes.
Okay, everybody's came out well. I was getting pictures all Friday afternoon. It was great.
It was so delicious, so delicious.
So good.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so my question was, I didn't think mine, this one tasted as good as the one before. If it's the same recipe, is there a reason they would taste it, you know, differently?
What was the taste that was different?
I don't know, it didn't, It's hard to remember. Maybe it was sweetness. I'm not sure, but I don't know. But
only if maybe it didn't.
It's always fun.
The flavor shouldn't be different unless you mismeasured or measured differently or put in more sugar the first time that you didn't realize or something like that.
Yeah. Would baking time make an impact on it? Like maybe
on the texture,
dryness versus moistness,
or on the texture? Like if it's drier or not? If you bake it, bake it longer, it dries out. But it wouldn't change the.
Maybe it's more texture that I was feeling. I don't know. It's been a week. I don't remember.
Mine was definitely ready before I thought it was going to be. So I was like, oh, I'm so glad I looked.
Everybody's oven is different, so
yeah, and I had just gotten mine fixed, right? So
probably a better oven is going to bake it faster. It's going to seal better, right? It's going to be better. It's going to be better sealed. It's going to keep the heat in better. So, you just don't know. You always have to look. You have to learn your own oven.
Yeah.
I saw some video where they said to really test if it's done, lift it up and tap on the bottom, and if it has like a hollow sound, then it's done. That's a general statement true for bread. It's also kind of hard to lift up, especially something that has an egg wash and it's stuck to like your parchment or whatever. So but also I think that challah has a different texture than like a sourdough or a wide, I forget what the word is, a bread, but a bread that has like a wide texture, lots of air and holes, which is not challah.
So like a
prayer helps. Prayer helps. I defy you to say no to that.
Well, it certainly changes how we see the bread. Experience the bread, right? That's what it does. It changes how we experience the bread. Oh, a rainy morning. Sorry, there's a little bit of noise in my background. It will stop. There's some work. There's some stuff happening outside. So, how's everybody else? Besides your challah, how's everybody?
Good.
Well, let's just sit for a moment. Let's just sit, be in touch with where your body is at right now. A rainy day is different than a sunny day. Right? You can notice the difference in weather and temperature. Just be present to what you woke up with this morning. In your limbs, in your torso, in your heart, in your head. Just with a few breaths, just reflect on, just like be with that. Don't even think about why it happened. Just to be present with the experience of where you are right now. a little louder than I intended. This morning, we're going to explore the Sfira, this divine expression of what the Sfira of Gevura, which we also have explored over the years that some of you have been doing different kinds of mindfulness and Musar practice with me. We talk about Gevura as strength, as inner strength. In this lead up to Rosh Hashanah, and we're thinking about God's qualities, the attribute of Gevura, of strength and might, is the idea of divine energy. It is associated with the force of judgment, what we call Din, which divinely, I would say, is like the force that measures and assesses the worthiness of creation. Gevura is, we talked last week, we're moving up this ladder of Sfirot. So last week when we looked at Tiferet as the divine quality, it's the balance between Gevura and Chesed. And so this week and next week, we're sort of at the apex of the human experience of God, Gevura this week and Chesed. So the experience of Gevura, of judgment, can't exist without the balancing of Chesed, which we find in this place of Tiferet, in the place of beauty that we talked about last week and we thought about. So Gevura has this sense of boundedness, right? Because judgment is a container of sorts. It's a bounding of experience. And so in the soul, the idea would be the power to restrain oneself appropriately. The spiritual state that the Hasidim associate with Gevura, with this boundedness, this judgment, is Yirah, the Hebrew word Yirah, or which you might hear the word Nora. It's hard to, Yirah is a challenging midah to, it's a beautiful and wonderful midah, and it's a particularly appropriate right now. We would translate it best as fear or awe, and I want to explore that with us in our mindfulness. Like, what are all those shades of fear and awe? And there are a number of words for fear. Like, fear in English is fear, and we might have some connotations of what that is. In Hebrew, they're actually different words. So there's the fear of, like, I lock my doors at night because I fear that somebody is going to break into my house. And that word is pachad, right? To be afraid, to have fear that in that way. And that's like, that's one kind of fear. And as I said, in English, we just have different definitions of the same word. Hebrew says, like, that's fear. But there's yirah, which is also fear, which even has its own shades, but not that inner experience of being afraid of something happening to us. That's how I would separate it out. Yirah is an inner state, and there's different kinds of fear, even in an inner state, not from an external force, right? So yirah, the word yirah actually appears like 40, 41 times in Torah. It's there. It appears frequently. So it's an important word for us to pay attention to. It connotes a lot of different kinds of inner experiences, but all that arise from our own being, our own mindful place, right? That's where I set aside pachad. If somebody else is going to do something to us, that makes us afraid. That's not what we're talking about. So in Torah, in the Tanakh, not in just Torah, in the whole Bible. I said Torah. I meant Tanakh. So in it carries a sense of hope, right? Of Yira can be a fear that, but that like something that looks ahead, like an anticipation, an uncertainty of anticipation. So in the book of Psalms, in Psalm 11, it says, happy is the person who fears, Yira, this is the same word, who fears God. But happy is the person who fears God. So there's something in that experience of Yira that will bring us joy and happiness. That sense of promise. Or in the book of Job, where we read, behold, the fear of God, Yira, the fear of God is wisdom. So in that somehow in that experience of fear, there's the promise of wisdom. So Yira, in fear, in that experience of fear or awe, holds a promise of something to come if we embody it, if we pay attention to it, if we experience it. There is an idea of reverence or fear. I don't know. Every person shall, in Leviticus 19 and Kedoshim, that is part of read again Yom Kippur afternoon in the Holiness Code, that says every person shall yira their mother and father, shall fear their mother and father. So there's potentially this idea of reverence in that word, which is easier to extend to like what we experience in the universe and with God. Or that sense of awe as well, not just like the fear coming from wisdom, but the story of Solomon in the first book of Kings, right? The famous story of Solomon and the baby. Everybody know that story? So there's two women who come, I'll give it to you really quick because I shouldn't say it without telling you what it is if you don't know. Two women come to King Solomon with two babies. One is dead, one is alive, and they each claim that the live baby is theirs. And Solomon, in his wisdom, decides that he can tell who the true mother is by threatening to bring harm to the live baby. And the mother, the one mother whose baby it is not, whose baby died, when Solomon threatens to cut the baby in half and just divide the baby between the two mothers, the mother whose baby it doesn't belong to says, great, give me half the baby. It's a parable. And the mother, of course, to whom the baby belongs says, no, 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 please, no harm, just give him to her. And then Solomon says, okay, I know who the mother is. But there's in that, when Israel hears the result of the story, Book of Kings tells us they had Yira of the king of Solomon. They feared, they had awe of the king because they saw that he had in fact God's wisdom, right? So there's like this, there's a lot of layers of Yira. And again, connected to the idea of wisdom in Psalms much later in Psalm 111, it says the beginning of wisdom is in fact Yira, the fear of God, and all who practice it gain understanding. And then there's sort of that inner, not fear of like retribution, but there's places where, when we talk about fear, because we're so unsettled, but we can turn to God. At the last line of Adon Olam says, Adonai li velo ira, same word. God is with me, I will not have fear, right? It's not pachad, it's not afraidness, it's like, I will, but I'll be settled. And in Psalm 27, which we read, it's part of like the period of Elul that says, God is my light, or Ivigishi, God is my light and my salvation. So that, where can I find awe? Where can I find Yira? So this spiritual quality of Yira, of fear and awe, like what does it mean for us to be mindfully present to like those experiences in ourselves right now that bring Yira. Think for a moment where you might have had an experience, a power or a mystery that it triggered awe, fear, reverence, all intertwined into one experience. Any thoughts on what that might be, or just hold that.
For me, it's natural phenomena and beautiful ones, not scary, that I find overwhelming, and I experience that awe.
That would be very expected, right? But the experience of creation.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm thinking about literally experiencing that, having the experience of going through an MRI tunnel and fear, but at the same, really coincidentally, kind of a feeling of strength and not exactly knowing at the time where that strength was coming from, but I felt protected by it. So that's, I'm remembering that.
So those experiences, right, of reverence, mystery, power, awe, fear, like all intertwined. Rabbi Alan Liu, who taught a lot of Jewish meditation and has written some really beautiful pieces, and one of my favorite, all-time favorite High Holy Day books, This is real. It's called This Is Real and You Are Completely Unprepared. He describes Yirah as the fear that overcomes us when we suddenly find ourselves in possession of considerable more energy than we are used to, inhabiting a larger space than we are used to inhabiting, the feeling that we are on sacred ground. So you may have been on sacred ground in the MRI, Karen. Right, you know, it's a beautiful, right, that feeling of overcome, but with a strength behind it, with some sense of grounding behind it. So the connection, I would say, between Yirah, why is the spiritual state of Yirah connected to Gevurah, connected to this experience of God as strength and judgment? Perhaps it's our souls need to restrain our inner desires, our inner urges, which is, that's what happens when we experience awe, right? It opens us up and it contains us all at the same time. Your awe helps us acknowledge greatness and strength that is beyond us. Right, it's not just all us, and so, and in fact, as Tanakh teaches a lot, and it's a means to an end, wisdom often. So, if our mindfulness practice is to try and open ourselves to our own inner wisdom, to pay attention to what is true in this moment for us, and to be aware of what we are experiencing, so that we can respond and be present in the world in the way we desire. Yirah is a path to being able, it's a path to that wisdom, right? So how do we embrace and embody that experience of reverence and awe and mystery and openness? Because Yirah shows us, right, our smallness in the mystery of largeness.
I think there's some fear in settling into mindfulness, right? There's some fear of that, right? So what, if I'm not being mindful right now, so what am I gonna find out when I am? So that kind of goes together, I think.
Right. And we judge ourselves, right? Mm-hmm. So how do we open instead to a place of reverence for what is in this moment, rather than just fear?
When whatever it is, right? It might not be beautiful, but well, it's there, right?
Yeah. So I want to sit again with that sense of perhaps unease or dis-ease, not disease, but dis-ease, with that experience of Yira and uncertainty. Because these days that are approaching us, that we are approaching, are called Yamim Noraim, the days of awe. And so this quality of Yira is very much bound into the mindful setting, the intention that we carry, that we have the opportunity to carry into the holidays ahead. So I wanted to just sit with actually a little bit of a sort of holding where we are first in this experience of Yira. So find your support, find your breath. And this sitting is to acknowledge the way we can open to the experience of Yira, of seeing the mystery, awe, reverence of the world around us, is to see our own place in that world. And our own place in that world is to acknowledge that we are imperfect. To acknowledge that each of us is an imperfect person. For that removes our experience of judging. Of judging ourselves. Of judging others. And so we sit. I am an imperfect person. In that imperfection, I am anxious about the unknown future, while I welcome the new year with its possibilities for renewal. My imperfections can open me to the mysteries to your to fear and awe and reverence. Imperfections. I hope to be more compassionate to myself and to others. Acknowledging my imperfections, I hope to be more patient with myself and with others. the days of Yamim Noraim, the days of awe, that are the time from Rosh Hashanah through Yom Kippur, are an opportunity for us to cultivate, to be mindful, even in a greater sense of magnifying the experience of reverence, awe, fear, in service of wisdom, in service of transformation. Talked about tapping into mindful experiences, Phyllis said, in nature, right? Like the big awesome ones, you know, standing on the rim of the Grand Canyon and just contemplating the beauty, the power, right? The power of the water that had to create this over thousands of years, the enormity of the time that it took. I think there's a sense of enormity in awe that if we tap into that, helps us to find our own, helps me to find my own place more spiritually grounding, that allows me to do or enables me to do the teshuva that I want. Because until I can find, it's kind of connected to humility, which is the very first quality we talked about these 7 weeks that we were embracing in our mindfulness practice, to like know my place. I have to see myself. If I see myself in the grand scheme of things, I can almost more easily see my imperfections. If I see myself as more in control, as bigger or stronger or more controlling than I am, then it's harder to make teshuva. It's harder to change because I can't see my own imperfections. So yirah, working with the quality of yirah, helps us to see ourselves more as the imperfect beings that we are, but with kindness. We can't forget that there's like loving kindness that we have to hold those imperfections with. It's not to just beat ourselves up that, okay, we're imperfect, but to recognize that that's part of our nature, and that allows us then to grow and change. Right, so seeing ourselves as the smallness in the larger universe is a pathway to actually doing teshuvah, that yirah, experiencing God in that way and the universe in that way can be transformative, that the purpose of awe can then actually help us to change, not just to experience the awe, but like it's in service of what? We saw that in Tanakh, in the passages in the Bible, right? It's in happiness and joy and wisdom. Like going through that journey brings us to a better place at the next stage along the path. In his book, God in Search of Man, Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel writes, awe precedes faith. It's actually at the root of faith. And we must grow in awe in order to reach faith. We must be guided by awe to be worthy of faith. Awe, he writes, rather than faith, is the cardinal attitude of the religious Jew. So it's not that faith brings awe, he is saying, but that experience of recognizing where we are in the world can actually bring, that's what brings faith. Noticing, paying attention to the experiences of the world around us is what can cultivate a deeper place in the world. Right, an experience of awe, right? It elevates us from the mundane, from the daily, from daily experiences. We can make it part of our daily experiences, but it takes us out of, you know, the errands and the shopping and the kids and the parents and the all the things that are pulling at us. And paying attention to those experiences of awe also help us to see that we're not like in our own little bubble, right? When we look out at the universe, when we sit, when there's a rainstorm and, you know, you're hearing the pouring rain and the thunder, and if you just pay attention to those sounds, like, it's not just me. I'm part of something larger. I'm not separate. There's something larger and deeper in life that I am a piece of. And that consciousness, I think, not only helps us move through life more settled, but especially at this time when we're looking at ourselves and looking to, especially due to Shuva, to make amends, to make repairs in ourselves and in our relationships, like that quality, being mindful to that is a stepping stone to opening ourselves to being able to do that. Because then we recognize the awesomeness of God, of what's bigger than us, the world and space and time that is huge relative to our own little time frame, right? Gives us a different sense of contours in the world. Maybe the contourlessness of the world. Like we can touch eternity in a way. There's a Jewish tradition of how to help, like physically or visually help us do that. We take a line from Psalms. It says, Shiviti Adonai Lenegdi Tamid. I place God before me always. And artists will take like a hand different version, you know, artistic renditions and painting clay and put those words on. It's actually, this, they call it a shiviti, or other words and other phrases, other sacred phrases. And that, like, we have that in front of us to remind us. We can think of, like, you know, tying a ribbon around your finger, like things. What are things that can remind us of this experience of Yirah, right? If I place God before me always, if I make a way in my life to pay attention always to that biggerness that is Yirah, that is awe and reverence and fear, that universe, that experience that is something larger than me, as an object of contemplation and reflection and reminder that I am always in the presence of something larger than me, of God. And so our mindful practice this week can include how we do that. What object might you have in your home that you can, or create something, or just write something on a piece of paper that you, a sticky note that you put on your computer because you're looking at your computer so much all day long. That brings you to that place of awe, of reverence, that will lead to wisdom, inner wisdom, wisdom in the world, right? That this quality in our experience can be transformative, especially at this time of year in the Shiyamim Noraim, but all the time. It's another lens that we can use each time we sit, or when we've sat down at the computer and we're just riled up. And how do we take that breath and recognize that Yirah can be a tool of mindfulness to see our place in the world. So one more moment of sitting. With words from Psalm 24. Psalm 24 says, who will go up to the mountain of God? who will stand in God's holy place? So sit for a minute with who of, will you, how will you lift yourself up and stand in God's holy place? What do you need to lift yourself up and stand in the mountain of God? Notice your senses. What's that spiritual state of yirah, of awe? What does it look like? What does it feel like? What does it smell like? What does it sound or taste like for you? And what would you want to pay attention to in your heart? Are there any thoughts or questions before we wrap up today? So this week, think about, can play with the ideas of reverence and awe of how it is that we stand in God's holy mountain. Where are we climbing these next days together? Thank you. It's lovely to see you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Share this time with you.
Thank you. Have a good week, everybody.
Yes, and a healthy one.
Yes.
Me too.